You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products. Because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Previously on Weedian House.
You know, you kind of feel like, oh, there's something wrong with me if everyone else can figure out how to make this happen. But it turns out they can't. I mean, for 1 in 5 community college students to be unhoused, kind of a shocking statistic, but it also doesn't surprise me given how much work we have to put in for school. How can we also work a full-time job? It doesn't seem like there's enough resources built around this.
I'm tired of a lot of it. Because a lot of people just necessarily like don't care. They carry on business as usual. And we have people that claim that they want to advocate, they want to help. But you have these supervisors, you have these higher ups come into the building. They don't even look the members in the eye.
Welcome back to We the Unhoused. I'm your host, Theo Henderson. First, a few shout outs. A very big thank you to Mikkel from Rotterdam in the Netherlands. I was very moved by your letter, and thank you for listening all the way from Europe. I hope that Weedian House can come and interview the individuals who are experiencing houselessness there in the future. My second shout out is to Steve Samuelson, who asked me a question I'll answer as honestly as I can. He asks if there are any churches helping with the unhoused crisis. Here's my feeling. There are many organizations who help the unhoused in Los Angeles. For the most part, in my experience being unhoused, most religious institutions here have a very heavy-handed approach in dealing with the unhoused, which deals with judgmental religious trauma and saviorism. The church is definitely not as helpful as they could be. Thank you for listening in to the conclusion of our three-part series of Blow the Whistle. I hope you find the conclusion as enlightening, inspiring, and a call to action to address the issues that beset houselessness. We have three new guests in this episode blowing the whistle on services offered to unhoused folks in the city of Los Angeles. But before we dive right in, let us discuss unhoused news. Our first story, Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt signed Senate Bill 1854, making it a crime to be unhoused and to refuse help. The bill takes effect in November 2024. If an unhoused person refuses aid, they can be jailed for 15 days or fined $50. Clearly, unhoused community members have limitless cash to afford such legal consequence. Our next story in Long Beach, California. Residents and neighborhoods are opposed to an affordable housing project. The project is a 7-story building with 100 residential units. After hostile local opposition, the city has since trimmed down the units to 70 residential units. Our next story, NIMBYs complained about Kansas opening a low-barrier shelter. After hostile vocal opposition, City Council voted 8-2 to restart the application process to build a low-barrier shelter. NIMBY common complaints are the lack of neighborhood input. This argument is used unilaterally and often when dealing with the unhoused getting services they sorely need. Hope Faith is the shelter. They will now have to reapply for more than $7 million in federal funds, which they originally had from the city before this hostile opposition. In Phoenix, Arizona, 90% of House of Seniors show signs of dementia or cognitive impairment. As Weedian House knows and has reported on, there has been an increase in senior citizens becoming unhoused. This study is important to the discussion of houselessness and shatters the myth that unhoused people don't want help. If senior citizens who are unhoused are having these challenges, making it a crime to be unhoused by stating that they refuse to be helped is not going to solve houselessness. And lastly, in New York, more than 1,000 unhoused children left their public schools after their parents and families were forced to move due to Mayor Eric Adams' 60-day policy of staying in shelters. And that's Unhoused News. When we come back, I will be speaking with our next whistleblower.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Welcome back to Weedian House. I'm Theo Henderson. Our first whistleblower this week is LJ, who spoke with me about being in some of the programs that have been touted as being successful in Los Angeles. Let's hear his story.
Hi, my name's LJ. I am a participant in the Inside Safe program. I grew up in LA. You know, I had a regular life before, you know.
What did you do before?
My last job, I was a consultant for a video game distributor.
Oh, wow.
I've had a lot of odd jobs, you know. I mean, I've also gotten into like, you know, growing marijuana for a while. Okay. So that was also cool.
How did you become unhoused? Because I know you just magically, you know, just after doing such an exciting job to say, hey, this is so boring, I just want to live out on Juanita. So I know that there had to be some kind of cascade event that led you into that.
I wasn't bored unhoused, but me and my son's mom had a falling out. You know, I asked for help, and instead of helping me, I was basically left on my own.
What help did you need?
I mean, as far as, you know, like I was suffering through addiction, working a lot. I used it to cheat so I can, you know, work and, you know, provide for my family, like for my son's mom and my son. Mm-hmm. And then it got to the point where, you know what, I'm making enough. I don't believe I have to work as hard as I have to and ask for help. And I was basically just shut out. And
That's capitalism. Yeah, that's this belief that you always have to work. It's nothing is never good enough. And if you, God, heaven forbid, you just slow down, then you are a failure. And it's very difficult to cope into that kind of dystopian reality.
Yeah. And then I was in the apartment like for a good while. And then I couldn't sustain myself at a certain point. I went to my family and I was told that, yeah, we can find a program for you. And I was like, no, I'm asking you guys for help. I mean, you know, like, you know, as my family, like, I don't really ask for help, as you know, at all. At this point, well, I was like, as soon as I heard we can find you a program, I said, okay, thank you, bye.
So the next question, logically, because I remember the first night that I was in house and how much I walked until all my legs fell off until I went to a hospital to sleep it off. What was your first night of being literally, you didn't feel you have no family support, you're out there on your own? What did you do and how was you able to manage to survive that first night?
My first night, I walked around, wandered around, only had a backpack and the clothes on my back. I remember I walked until I got tired. I think I must have walked in several circles until I said, okay, I think this is a good place to rest for the meantime. I sat down on a set of stairs and I remembered the sprinkler just waking me up and I was like, oh, wow, it's morning.
So you were staying and until you obviously you landed at Juanita, the community there. How was that? You know, because it sounded like you guys really had a close-knit community and for you guys to organize. Many people don't know. Unhoused people are very aware of community and they rely on community because of the hostilities of law enforcement, the city, NIMBYs. We basically rely on the kindness of our community who understands our struggles. So what was the situation with you?
Right. Actually I was aware of Juanita. There's several Filipinos that I've known for years. So I'd go there and I'd, you know, just say hi, like, you know, pass by every now and then, bring some food if I can. What I discovered was that there's this camaraderie that they've developed, and it's actually one of the cleanest places that you'll see.
I actually was there for one of the sweep defenses over at Juanita, not recently, but maybe a year and a half ago. They were trying to target and run out the unhoused over there, and I was over there at running one of the live streams. So, yes, I do
know. The one in front of PATH.
Yes, exactly. The exact same one. And,
yeah.
And not only that one per PATH, and they were trying to sneak and do another community that was not even on the list. And
Madison.
Absolutely.
I'm knowing. Yeah. I've been in house for about 6 years now, like a little more, you know, but I discovered that like, hey, you know, like they were right next to each other. They look out for each other. They break bread together, you know? And I found that like, hey, you know what, even though no matter how tough things are going, you know, people still have this instinct to just, you know, get along and form this like bond. They have this amazing bond where somehow, even though they don't get along, they'll still stop and help each other out, you know?
It's called empathy.
I mean, yeah.
And I wish more house people would develop it, but that's very difficult for something that's not our society looks upon, frowns upon. But yes, you're very correct.
Yeah.
So let's get talking to housing for Juanita. So you were mentioning it earlier. So tell us a little bit about that.
Housing for Juanita, it started out from the ABS-CBN, I guess is a news station from the Philippines. They covered the story and then they interviewed some people. I was there, but I just didn't want to, you know, I just stayed behind the scenes. And then I guess several other organizations saw the coverage. And next thing you know, we have other organizations there that would provide like, they bring donations, bring some food, and then they would actually like, you know, hang out. And I found that a bit surprising, but at the same time, it's like, you know, there's still some good people out there. And then they were there when we were picked up by the mayor's people and brought into the Inside Safe program. And we've met with them on a weekly basis. They've been accommodating. They're actually, they supported us as far as giving us resources and knowledge that, you know, we can help you, but not in the way you think. You know, we can help you by letting you know how you can fight for yourself and fight for others that can't. So it was really empowering, you know. They've been there through thick and thin, and they're well aware of what's going on as far as the staff from PATH.
I was going to get into that. It's like, tell us a little bit about your experiences living in Inside Safe.
Well, for 6 months now, in 2 days, it'll be 6 months, which is the max that they have as far as their agreement. We've complied. I've complied. I never had any problems. A complaint, I'll voice it out. And usually it'll be through, you know, deaf ears.
What complaints did you have?
Okay, to get down to it, after going through the initial agreement that they had a sign, they followed none of it.
Okay.
They violated everything that they have on the agreement that they have, that they gave us and we signed when we got there. As far as having staff that treats you with dignity and respect, that didn't exist.
Okay.
Staff that would actually help you with your housing. You know, we had to talk to the council members, assistant, the board of the directors from PATH, and people from the mayor's office just to initiate us getting started with our program. This was like 5 months in.
I was going to ask you, because Mayor Bass has been receiving such glowing praise from news outlets like CNN, LA Times, and mainstream media, as that she's doing miracles in getting unhoused people off the streets. Her philosophy is getting the airplane in the air and fixing it while you're flying along. It doesn't sound like this is going as well as she's making it out to be. So if you're 5 months in the program and you have to have such a lion's share of the upper management to get basic needs that you are expecting from the beginning, it doesn't seem like it's a success. Maybe I'm reading this wrong. What is your take on that?
As far as getting the airplane off the air, I mean, maybe from a bird's eye's point of view. But if you're in the airplane, seems like we're still on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't taken off. They're just making noises outside of the airplane, like pretending to be.
Or screaming because if the airplane's not completely fixed.
Yeah.
I don't know how calm anybody, if you ever see the plane movies, and I, you know, you're seeing things, the turbulence. Yeah,
they have somebody shaking.
Like, exactly. Shaking, so you can see how people like freaking out. So maybe it is an apropos metaphor, but she probably didn't think the metaphor through because, you know, the people that are in the plane are probably screaming to get back on the ground. So there's some stability.
Well, anybody that would probably give her praise that it's doing well would be anybody that thought that seeing people unhoused is a nuisance. Not caring that those are people out there, you know. My main quirk about this whole thing is that it was supposed to be 3 months, then we get housing. Now, we're still there after twice the length of the expected time, which is the max. And I'm thinking, okay, what about the people that's still out there? I mean, now they're doing things with food that if it gets cold, they'll throw it out.
Oh, wow.
And I've brought this up. I said, wow, that's a lot of food. And they go, oh yeah, if it gets cold, it's not good anymore. Mm-hmm. There's a microwave right there. I'm looking at it, like, you know, that's a lot of food. So, you know, sometimes I would go with another participant. We'd bring it to another encampment. So just because it's a way, why waste food like that? You know,
and it's so apropos for the moment because she's now being audited for the and I think this is such the glaring result of mismanagement of money. Mismanagement resources. So one of the things I would like to know is, like, is the food of quality? How is the staff? How does the staff treat you guys?
The food is mediocre. I mean, granted, it is food. They serve it 3 times a day. If you call leaving it on the table for us to grab whenever, you know, when it's feeding time. Now, up until recently, they keep it in a heated kind of like a refrigerator, but, you know, a heater type. And so now they grab it for us again. So I'm like, wow, cool. Now they're serving us. They're doing work. As far as being audited, the place where I'm at, I was informed that it was not going to be called or be part of Inside Safe.
Oh, really?
And it will just be referred to as an interim housing.
Oh.
Maybe just to avoid being audited because it's
initially was Inside Safe, but then they tried to change the name.
Huh? Yeah. Well, it's one of the worst places. Like, and the staff has told us this. You know, and there's me amongst other people. we've complained and we voiced out our opinion. We told them, we're not, okay, this is what you're going to provide after what you said you're going to do, or this is after the agreement, this is what you're going to present to us. We were like, no.
And one of the things in other Inside State is just because this is not just an exception that, for example, some of the residents have stayed for some time. And then after a certain period of time, the staff comes to them and says, what's your exit plan? Because either you're going to congregate shelter or you're going to have to find your own way out of housing. And right. So now unhoused people in other areas, it's like, you know, either they self-evicting themselves because they just basically listen to, you know.
Sounds like a scare tactic.
Exactly. You know? Well, yeah, to get you to self-evict because, you know, the staff is either they're short staff or they don't have enough staff to be able to support your needs. And you've been there in limbo, and which brings up a weird thing. If they could find housing, they wouldn't be in Inside Safe. They would be trying to get out. they wouldn't have needed the program. So.
Part of the thing is that they require like several documents, you know, just to, so we can transition on to getting our permanent housing. Hmm. Even with people that do have everything they need, they still have not started looking for an apartment or spoke to anybody from permanent housing. Nor were they encouraged. I know somebody that's actually given a 30-day write-up, even though they have all their documents ready because, you know, and here's the funny part. He was given a 30-day eviction notice because he was helping out a friend that didn't have a place to go to shower. Mm-hmm. And this caseworker went and followed him to his room and stayed on the door and kept on knocking, and she was in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. My friend was trying to voice out with his opinion. Mm-hmm. And everything, I have a recording of it, it's funny, but because, you know, I've grown close to everybody that's there, you know, we've been there for 6 months. I mean, you know, we have to band together. It's the staff, the security, they're more focused on property, not people.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of property, many a times, like the reason I turned down during the COVID, because they were going to throw away my essential stuff, like, they, at the time, I don't know if they changed, but they had, you had to have two garbage bags, two clear garbage bags to take in to the hotels. And I had more than two bags, like, you know, because in order to survive, and, you know, I mean,
your personality, you can't have your life in two bags.
Exactly. But apparently they believed that that was going to be sufficient. Oh, man, it was crazy. 11 staff members, 4 cop cars to make sure. Yeah. Yeah. This was during the pandemic. They were trying to evict me. And when I was down in the downtown LA area, and I never forgot that. And then too, when they started explaining project at the time, Project Room Key for the, I said, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. I'm not doing a 7 o'clock curfew. In the beginning of time, they were really, really anal retentive about the making sure they're as carceral as they can make it.
They try to, exactly.
And you're like, who is going to willingly, unless they, in desperation, they will just stay a few months or a few weeks and then they'll leave on their own. I said, no. I'm not even going to go through that. And so that's the same thing that a lot of the programs, when you hear, like when Mayor Bass says, well, people want housing. Yes, they want, but they want dignified housing. You're not offering dignified housing. You're just throwing slapdash solutions because you feel offended to see unhoused people out on the street is unacceptable. However, you understand there's autonomy, there's dignified living in the best situation that they can. That's why they're out there. They're not out there because it's a thing to do or they just don't have nothing to do. They're there because they don't want to be abused in order for them to get housing or to be forced into a carceral solution.
Yes.
LJ's interview was so riveting that I invited him to stay and bring two other guests into the discussion. When we come back, we're going to bring two more whistleblowers in to talk about the city's ineptitude with houselessness.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Welcome back to Weedy and House. For our final interview of the Whistleblower series, I continued to speak with LJ and brought in two other whistleblowers to continue the discussion. Let's welcome Meech and Anya to the discussion.
Hi, I'm Ina Morton. I'm an organizer with Gabriela Los Angeles, which is a militant Filipino women's organization. It's actually based in the Philippines, but we're based here as a LA chapter. And I've been meeting with LJ and the other folks who used to live on Juanita since September last year, about a month before they got swept. We had heard, you know, that there was like a large community of like folks, you know, like our own, like Kababayan is what we say, like our own people, right, who are like suffering. So we went and we started meeting with folks really regularly and just hearing about, you know, everything that was going on that they were experiencing on the street. And actually were with folks as they were navigating, you know, really being honestly like really violently swept and displaced into.
Sweeps are violence.
So exactly. Inside Safe program, right? Where they're like, oh, they were putting cameras in people's faces and being like, do you consent to this sweep?
That was the question I was going to ask you because, they're still doing it. So, okay, I'm sorry. I had a flashback. So I'm sorry. Please continue.
Yeah, of course. And they had a bulldozer there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what options are you being given? Right. And then there were folks, of course, who were like, yeah, I'm like excited to get a space. Right. No one goes into it trying to create trouble out of nowhere. Right.
But there's a fear to that. Yeah. Like when you mentioned that, I was going to mention it as well as you because they'll push the camera because part of the reason is because before they wouldn't do it. They would just unceremoniously just start throwing unhoused people's things away. And then you have to make a choice. Either get in or you're going to get your things thrown in, thrown away. But now they're trying to cover their behind, but they're still doing it with the veil of threats and a veil of intimidation.
Yeah.
Because you got maybe cops not nearby that they can call. Because if you turn down Project Inside Safe or whatever, then the cops can come and say, well, you can't stay here, kick rocks, or they can do some other tactics. But this, I'm digressing. This is your story. Let me finish you, let you do it. But it did trigger me to remember that. So.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I remember reading actually, well now like fast forward, right? It's been almost 6 months and like shit hasn't been done. And I knew folks who were living in like Project Room Key sites. And honestly, you know, my perspective in talking with folks is that actually Inside Safe or like Inside Starving as you're calling it is like so often a lot worse. Like something that's been happening in the last month is they've been trying to double and even triple people up inside of their rooms.
They tried.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I don't know if the rooms have gotten bigger, but they weren't big when we were. No, you turn around, that's the room.
So. Yeah. You can imagine it, maybe, but no.
And then with the bed bugs and, you know, that's just.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was not that great. But I'm going to quickly shift to my right and get you to introduce yourself, and then we'll have a more of a relaxed conversation.
So I'm John Zafra Haas. I'm actually a filmmaker and organizer as well. And I'm part of the CCLAB Media Collective, which is a multimedia collective of Filipino filmmakers, really like uplifting stories in the community. And yeah, really what we've been learning as part of the Housing for Juanita campaign is that houselessness is really something affecting the Filipino community.
It's not talked about a lot.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. And one of the big questions we're asking is, where is the support from our own government? Mm-hmm. Some of the residents in Inside Starving are actually Philippine nationals. Mm-hmm. And the Philippine government has funding set aside to their nationals in distress, but they have yet to reach out or even investigate the situation of unhoused Filipinos in their neighborhood, their district.
And I'm so glad that you guys have chosen to come on and bring sound the alarm up, or because my title is Blow the Whistle. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's double entendre, but that's the point. It is, we're still blowing the whistle on these real issues. And when you mentioned it, I did remember earlier, like when the pandemic, there is a really unspoken community, Asian communities that are unhoused because people don't compute that houselessness affects them as well.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm. At every stage of life. And but also the fact that you, like you mentioned, that this is not being talked about. You know, there's no really push for a solution or even a conversation that doesn't require carceral or criminalization, because that's always seems to be the flavor of the month. No matter what group it is, they always have some kind of 4118 or 5611 or Proposition 1, or if they can speak endlessly about some kind of way to criminalize poor people and unhoused or housing insecurity or vendors, and they have time for that. But when we talk about humane, dignified solutions, then they become ghosts. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry, I digress. Please continue.
No, this is all really great and, or not great, but we're glad you're covering this, because I think another issue is a lot of Filipinos actually come to the U.S. via forced migration, economic displacement, and really face tough working conditions. And we've even seen with some of the residents at Inside Starving that they're actually caregivers and they're being exploited, paid low wages and picked up from the encampment to actually basically experience wage theft by employers in the caregiving industry.
Yeah. More like human trafficking.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's literally human trafficking.
Literally, but they're just trying to use a little fancier name, but that's definitely disgraceful.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to point out, because I think all marginalized communities in some facet or another have dealt with some type of migration. My ancestors, my relatives, I don't know if you heard the Great Migration because of Jim Crow and the Ku Klux Klan lynching them and things of that nature. The Filipino community, the Latino community, we all had this need to leave life and death situations. And I think that could be fair to say. And always the conversation, it always shifts. And it's so important that we may not be in the same boat, but we are in the same storm. Some of us are drowning. Some of us are dead. Some of us is barely hanging on to the life raft. And some of us trying to jump off the boat in order to something better. And with this conversation is so important, how houselessness is a wide swath. It is more than just encampments. It's people that are in various stages of distress and displacement. And I think it's so apropos if we're looking at the conversation what's going on in Palestine, Congo, and other areas. These are interconnected. It's not in isolation. To bring the conversation fuller into the issue, what else have you seen in the communities that you go in? I'll start with LJ and I'll take it from the left and I'll do it from the right.
I mean, I've seen plenty being out there for, you know, about 6 years. Overall, I believe this is more than just a homelessness issue. Mm-hmm. It goes beyond that. This is a human right issue, you know? Housing should be for everybody. Like, how can the United States pay for another country's subsidized housing when they can't even provide for their own? It makes no sense to me. Where do we cut the cord at this point? Mm-hmm. You know? And why implement these entities that supposedly doing what, assisting the homeless, you know, there's supposedly people assisting the homeless, but they are not even doing any of that. You know, we would.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
And this definitely, what my grandparents would say, this cooks my grits. And and I have to say this because everybody, and particularly in recent times, is always asking for more police or more security or public safety. And it drives me nuts that particularly in Los Angeles, we are over $3 billion that we pay to police. And even with all of the supposedly financial arrears and all of the financial instability, we always find some kind of way to give out funding for cops. Mm-hmm. And we're giving funding for the cops from the city, other entities like libraries and others are still giving money. It's like, where in the world does it end when we finally says, why are we giving cops money to keep criminalizing us? Mm-hmm. We're poor. We can barely support. And why do we have poor people that really want to keep cheering this nonsense on? It's not going to change because they're, now they're going to be hitting you. And then you're going to be thinking because you're different and they're going after you, that it's not the same. But that's one of the things I wanted to talk about, because now this audit is coming out. Mm-hmm. But she's making it sound like the police and the firefighter funding is not going to be affected. She's offering raises for the cops, who is not creating or solving the houseless issue. Mm-hmm. So why in the world is it that we constantly, at every time that there's a crisis, that we keep shelling out more money for cops?
And I believe it was, what, a $13 billion budget within the last 2 years?
Absolutely.
I love grits, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, there's a $250 million budget for Inside Safe alone. Now, there's a proposed $125,000 per person for the year. We've probably seen not even 10,000 of that, including an allotted amount for the room rental, whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, do we really need more police? No, we don't. We don't. I've been out there. Like, I'm not scared of gangsters. I'm not scared of, like, anybody else. But the police, yeah, I'm scared of the police because they can kill you and get away with it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm scared of the police.
Yeah.
They don't protect and serve.
And they get cheered on by the most hateful kind of communities because they know that they're, in their hopes that they're probably not going to be affected, but they're still affected regardless of how they believe so. They're taking money out of all of our pockets, and they're taking money to create an environment that is nothing but violence and harm instead of creating community solutions. And then don't get me started, but I will let you start on this because I'm about to get on my soapbox.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the context of like policing, you know, we would also take it another level and like talk about like, you know, militarism and military budgets too, right? Mm-hmm. Both like from the U.S. and also from the Philippines, right? Like the U.S. military budget this year is the largest it's ever been. It's almost $1 trillion, mm-hmm. which like I can't even fathom how much money that is, right? You know, money that's going to weapons to fund genocide in Israel and also in the Philippines, actually, where we also see, you know, how there's a war on the poor here in this country. There's a huge war on the poor in the Philippines. And that's a huge part of why so many of our people are here, too, right? So we're asking ourselves the same question, right? All of this money going to war, all this money going to policing, like, where's the money for the people, right? And like, why is it also that we see the war and the police actually be turned out against our own people, right? Like, if you probably don't know this, but there's actually like a Philippine National Police office here in Los Angeles.
No, I didn't.
That also is actively surveilling and policing Filipinos here. Oh. Red tagging Filipino activists here, right?
They got funding for that.
No, I definitely did not know that. No.
Just like how the police here have light tanks.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Well, you know, also people don't know, too, the LAPD and other police officers go to Israel to get the type of training, which we see what they do here. And people don't know that. Of course, with the Palestinian conflict, they make it sound like that they are innocent victims. But also, you know, they're creating cop cities because the conversation is reaching a more of a fever pitch. There's no way that you can ignore the realities, because houselessness is affecting everything. Poverty, the idea of people arguing for people to have a livable wage and upset because people that work at McDonald's want to not to be suffering or starving. And the businesses are reacting by upping the prices of food in order to create this scarcity narrative. So the whole idea is to use those type of conversations, which is why unification and understanding the key issue is not people that are coming, because we all are displaced. We all are being harmed by the system. We have to understand the enemy is bigger than people that you're seeing that's trying to just survive in desperate straits. But I digress again. Please, what do you have to say?
Well, actually, backtracking a little bit, and you talked about how a lot of these programs really try to individualize, you know, the people needing housing. They try to, you know, blame them for their circumstances. And I think, like, tying that into also Filipino culture and the history of colonization in the Philippines, that's a huge issue that's been 400 years of Spanish colonization followed by U.S. imperialism. And something I think, you know, that I've seen that's been really inspiring about the Housing for Juanita campaign is LJ and Kuya Jason. Kuya's kind of like mm-hmm. elder, like uncle.
Older brother.
Yeah. Thank you. But
I'm not a tito yet.
But got a few years on it. Yeah.
But you know, LJ is leading this campaign, and we're really seeing these residents breaking out of even these colonial mindsets that have been. It's really hard to detangle and pull that out of you. But we're seeing them take that lead. And yeah, it's been really frustrating seeing how carceral this program is and how they're being blamed for their circumstances rather than being empowered and actually listened to by mm-hmm. the staff.
I think we were empowered by you guys.
Yeah.
You know, you guys showed us strength, because now, like, we know we can voice out our opinion. We know we can talk to whoever, but we just weren't aware of how to go about it. So I thank you guys a lot. And we are going to blow the whistle on this. We are mm-hmm. going to blow it out of proportion because it's too much. It's like they're not doing anything to help. All they're doing is just they created a system that's designed to fail on itself. And at the same time, it's making the people that are already down and out look even worse. So where's the funding here? Where's mm-hmm. the money? You know, why are they so greedy with the money? It's like, when is enough ever going to be enough? You know?
I was going to say, too, one of the things that I applaud, which is I'm so excited that you guys are on the show, is also to show other unhoused communities how we can have these kind of movements mm-hmm. that necessarily is not always house or savior centered or it's like or it's most importantly. One of the things that I'm proud of, like, and I definitely extending an invitation because it's this June, is I have created it's a memorial called Can You See Me? And if you don't know what that is, how it started was I was sitting and at the time I was eating something in Little Tokyo. And an unhoused person at the time, I was running to run to an errand and I seen another unhoused person. He spoke to me. I spoke to him. I didn't really get a chance to say enough and I just kept right on going. And that very next night, he passed away. And the thing with it is that the treatment of how this man was treated. He was laying there. He was passed away. They threw a sheet on him. People were still touring, laughing, joking, taking pictures. It wasn't, no one really took the moment to understand because, which is a very unique contrast. That's why I see such of the outbreak when you see the atrocities over in Palestine and how people are just moved. They're showing pictures. They're showing videos. They're telling you not to look away. But while it's really under your nose here, the slow genocide, the hidden, the invisible genocide of houseless people from not only out on the streets in hotels, like what happened over in Project Home Key, which is probably happening, starving, mm-hmm. and other facets of unstable housing. And it made me create this memorial, which is I've been doing it now close to 4 years now. It's called the Can You See Me Memorial. And I try to do it twice a year, which is coming up in June. I do it at City Hall. I have a coffin and I have a coffin with a white sheet where we write the names of unhoused people that have passed away from all over the world. It doesn't mean just Los Angeles. And to responses that I got, that when people see it or people that you would not have gathered that a house that were embarrassed to talk about their brother that OD'd that was unhoused, or they didn't know that their father was unhoused until someone called and told them they had to collect their things, or they got into the movement because they didn't realize that their father was unhoused, or they had a favorite uncle and their uncle who had suffered from mental challenges and they found him on the street and the family was embarrassed, but he created a mini memorial for him because of the shame of mental health. So this conversation is like, which I am extending a hand, invitation to you guys to join me. I'll give you further details, but also to the listeners to reach in and come and to learn. It is just as equally as important as the Palestinian conflict. It is happening in your own backyard, and it's important that you show up just as you showed up for the Palestinian, Congo, and other conflicts to show that there are humans that are dying in these various and diverse type mm-hmm. of environments. And the conversation needs to be had just equally as the conflict that we're having overseas.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Did I forget anything that you guys want to mention?
I mean, like you said, everything is relevant. The relevance is just it's in front of our face, you know? Like, we got to just get over ourselves and just, you know, be human to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other way, you know? Like, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I think my call to action for people also, right, is like, you know, for people who do have that type of, like, privilege, come from a higher class upbringings or, like, are housed, right? Like, we all have a obligation to really work very closely and do all that we can for people who are, you know, our friends, our family, our comrades in this fight, right? Like, LJ said such nice things earlier, but really we have, like, learned so much and been able to build out and further, like, our struggle, right? Which is, you know, not just a housing struggle. It's much larger, you know? It's also about wages, right? But it's also even about, like, all of our own people's liberations, right?
Indeed.
In Gabriela, we, you know, are fighting for, like, national democracy in the Philippines. We see this as, you know, an extension of that, of the way that our people are exported for cheap labor by a country that's been collaborators with the U.S. for a long time. And this system just turns people out, abandons them on the street. So, you know, we are all called to build together, stand in solidarity with each other. Yeah, that's I think that's it.
Is there any way for anyone to reach out to do donations or volunteer to you guys' cause? Please educate us, illuminate us, enlighten us.
Yeah, actually, we have our, it's easy to find us with the Housing for Juanita on account on Instagram. Okay. And we are accepting donations because, we all meet together in the park behind the Hollywood Inn.
Lake Street Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
And every Sunday we have discussions with the residents and just really listen to what are the conditions they're experiencing and we learn from them. And we'd love for more people to actually join us in person because there's nothing like actually just spending time with the folks in the program and learning from them. They're the experts of their own conditions.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And one more thing is that, you know, Karen Bass has been really open, sadly, that this program is meant to get votes, essentially, to look good for voters.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't want bad press around this. They won't change anything.
I say, you know, oh my goodness.
Look at that.
So yeah, that's why we need people to actually show up and really like share the posts, share with the residents stories that are online. Just really elevate their experiences and that's the only way we're going to at least force them to like make changes. I don't know.
Absolutely. And like I say, I do this podcast for primarily to get the voices out, to blow the whistle, but also to give a call to action for people to start to spread Weedian House to other places that need illumination. Like I said, I've learned a lot about the community conversation here. And if I have learned it, I know that there is many people that do not know what's really going on, because like sometimes houselessness is created in this binary that, you know, there are the bad minorities. Unfortunately, they called both black and brown community members as the bad minority. So it's easy to keep us in that kind of negative, but understanding that houselessness is a big, it's a expanding balloon that as soon as going to pop, it's going to be everywhere. And it's, if it's not already so.
I think it is everywhere.
Yeah, and it's going to be in a way that you can't look away. You can't reason away. It cannot be every body cannot be personally irresponsible that they decide to want to live out in disastrous or displacement environments or desperate kind of situations. So until that day happens, that we are in a state of education, empathy, and enlightenment, I thank you all for tuning in and listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to all the guests that were gracious about being interviewed on their experiences with what the city offers the unhoused community. And this concludes our three-part series on Blow the Whistle. Please like and subscribe. And if you would like to share your story on Weedian House, please reach out to me at weedianhouse.com, Weedian House on Instagram, or email me at weedianhouse@gmail.com. Our next episode will take a completely different direction and talk to a mutual aid group that has been around since the early pandemic. Thank you again for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding. Weedian House is a production of iHeartRadio. It is written, hosted, and created by me, Theo Henderson. Our producers, JB Loftus, Haley Fager, Katie Fischel, and Lyra Smith. Our editor is Adam Wand, and our logo art is also by Katie Fischel. Thanks for listening.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.